The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 12, The Way of Equality, page 709. It will appear from the description of the complete and perfect equality that this equality has two sides. It must therefore be arrived at by two successive movements. One will liberate us from the action of the lower nature and admit us to the calm peace of the divine being. The other will liberate us into the full being and power of the higher nature and admit us to the equal poise and universality of a divine and infinite knowledge, will of action, Ananda. The first may be described as a passive or negative equality, an equality of reception, which fronts impassively the impacts and phenomena of existence and negates the dualities of the appearances and reactions which they impose on us. The second is an active, a positive equality, which accepts the phenomena of existence, but only as the manifestation of the one divine being, and with an equal response to them, which comes from the divine nature in us, and transforms them into its hidden values. The first lives in the peace of the one Brahman, and puts away from it the nature of the active ignorance. The second lives in that peace, but also in the Ananda of the divine, and imposes on the life of the soul in nature the signs of the divine knowledge, power, and bliss of being. It is this double orientation united by the common principle which will determine the movement of equality in the integral yoga. The effort towards a passive or purely receptive equality may start from three different principles or attitudes, which all lead to the same result and ultimate consequence: endurance, indifference, and submission. The principle of endurance relies on the strength of the spirit within us to bear all the contacts, impacts, suggestions of this phenomenal nature that besieges us on every side without being overborne by them and compelled to bear their emotional, sensational, dynamic, intellectual reactions. The outer mind in the lower nature has not this strength. Its strength is that of a limited force of consciousness which has to do the best it can with all that comes in upon it or besieges it from the greater whirl of consciousness and energy which environs it on this plane of existence. That it can maintain itself at all and affirm its individual being in the universe is due indeed to the strength of the spirit within it. But it cannot bring forward the whole of that strength or the infinity of that force to meet the attacks of life. If it could, it would be at once the equal and master of its world. In fact, it has to manage as it can. It meets certain impacts and is able to assimilate, equate, or master them partially or completely, for a time or wholly, and then it has in that degree the emotional and sensational reactions of joy, pleasure, satisfaction, liking, love, etc., or the intellectual and mental reactions of acceptance, approval, understanding, knowledge, preference. And on these, its will seizes with attraction, desire, the attempt to prolong, to repeat, to create, to possess, to make them the pleasurable habit of its life. Other impacts it meets, but finds them too strong for it, or too dissimilar and discordant, or too weak to give it satisfaction. These are things which it cannot bear, or cannot equate with itself, or cannot assimilate. And it is obliged to give to them reactions of grief, pain, discomfort, dissatisfaction, disliking, disapproval, rejection, inability to understand or know, refusal of admission. Against them, it seeks to protect itself, to escape from them, to avoid or minimize their recurrence. It has, with regard to them, movements of fear, anger, shrinking, horror, aversion, disgust, shame, would gladly be delivered from them. But it cannot get away from them, for it is bound to and even invites their causes, and therefore the results. For these impacts are part of life, tangled up with the things we desire, and the inability to deal with them is part of the imperfection of our nature. Other impacts, again, the normal mind succeeds in holding at bay or neutralizing, and to these it has a natural reaction of indifference, insensibility, or tolerance, which is neither positive acceptance and enjoyment nor rejection or suffering. To things, persons, happenings, ideas, workings, whatever presents itself to the mind, there are always these three kinds of reaction. At the same time, in spite of their generality, there is nothing absolute about them. They form a scheme for a habitual scale which is not precisely the same for all, or even for the same mind at different times or in different conditions. The same impact may arouse in it at one time and another the pleasurable or positive, the adverse or negative, or the indifferent or neutral reactions. The soul which seeks mastery may begin by turning upon these reactions the encountering and opposing force of a strong and equal endurance. Instead of seeking to protect itself from or to shun and escape the unpleasant impacts, it may confront them and teach itself to suffer and to bear them with perseverance, with fortitude and increasing equanimity, or an austere or calm acceptance. This attitude, this discipline, brings out three results, three powers of the soul in relation to things. First, it is found that what was before unbearable becomes easy to endure. The scale of the power that meets the impact rises in degree. It needs a greater and greater force of it, or of its protracted incidence, to cause trouble, pain, grief, aversion, or any other of the notes in the gamut of the unpleasant reactions. Secondly, it is found that the conscious nature divides itself into two parts. One of the normal mental and emotional nature in which the customary reactions continue to take place. Another of the higher will and reason which observes and is not troubled or affected by the passion of this lower nature, does not accept it as its own, does not approve, sanction, or participate. Then the lower nature begins to lose the force and power of its reactions, to submit to the suggestions of calm and strength from the higher reason and will. And gradually, that calm and strength take possession of the mental and emotional, even of the sensational, vital, and physical being. This brings the third power and result, the power by this endurance and mastery, this separation and rejection of the lower nature, to get rid of the normal reactions and even, if we will, to remold all our modes of experience by the strength of the Spirit. This method is applied not only to the unpleasant, but also to the pleasant reactions. The soul refuses to give itself up to or be carried away by them. It endures with calm the impacts which bring joy and pleasure, refuses to be excited by them, and replaces the joy and eager seeking of the mind after pleasant things by the calm of the spirit. It can be applied, too, to the thought mind in a calm reception of knowledge and a limitation of knowledge which refuses to be carried away by the fascination of this attractive or repelled by dislike for that unaccustomed or unpalatable thought suggestion and waits on the truth with a detached observation which allows it to grow on the strong, disinterested, mastering will and reason. Thus, the soul becomes gradually equal to all things, master of itself, adequate to meet the world with a strong front in the mind and an undisturbed serenity of the spirit. The second way is an attitude of impartial indifference. Its method is to reject at once the attraction or the repulsion of things, to cultivate for them a luminous impassivity, an inhibiting rejection, a habit of dissociation and desuetude. This attitude reposes less on the will, though will is always necessary, than on the knowledge. It is an attitude which regards these passions of the mind as things born of the illusion of the outward mentality, or inferior movements unworthy of the calm truth of the single and equal spirit, or of a vital and emotional disturbance to be rejected by the tranquil observing will and dispassionate intelligence of the sage. It puts away desire from the mind, discards the ego which attributes these dual values to things, and replaces desire by an impartial and indifferent peace, and ego by the pure self, which is not troubled, excited, or unhinged by the impacts of the world. And not only is the emotional mind quieted, but the intellectual being also rejects the thoughts of the ignorance and rises beyond the interest of an inferior knowledge to the one truth that is eternal and without change. This way, too, develops three results or powers by which it ascends to peace. First, it is found that the mind is voluntarily bound by the petty joys and troubles of life, and that in reality these can have no inner hold on it if the soul simply chooses to cast off its habit of helpless determination by external and transient things. Secondly, it is found that here too a division can be made, a psychological partition between the lower or outward mind, still subservient to the old habitual touches, and the higher reason and will, which stand back to live in the indifferent calm of the spirit. There grows on us, in other words, an inner separate calm, which watches the commotion of the lower members without taking part in it or giving it any sanction. At first, the higher reason and will may be often clouded, invaded, the mind carried away by the incitation of the lower members. But eventually this calm becomes inexpugnable, permanent, not to be shaken by the most violent touches. Na dukena gurunapi vichalyate. This inner soul of calm regards the trouble of the outer mind with a detached superiority or a passing uninvolved indulgence, such as might be given to the trivial joys and griefs of a child, does not regard them as its own or as reposing on any permanent reality. And finally, the outer mind, too, accepts by degrees this calm and indifferent serenity. It ceases to be attracted by the things that attracted it or troubled by the griefs and pains to which it had the habit of attaching an unreal importance. Thus, the third power comes, an all-invading power of wide tranquility and peace, a bliss of release from the siege of our imposed, fantastic, self-torturing nature, the deep, undisturbed, exceeding happiness of the touch of the eternal and infinite, replacing by its permanence the strife and turmoil of impermanent things. Brahma samsparsham ajantam sukham asnute. The soul is fixed in the delight of the self, atmarati, in the single and infinite ananda of the spirit, and hunts no more after outward touches and their griefs and pleasures. It observes the world only as the spectator of a play or action in which it is no longer compelled to participate. The third way is that of submission, which may be the Christian resignation founded on submission to the will of God, or an unegoistic acceptance of things and happenings as a manifestation of the universal will in time, or a complete surrender of the person to the divine, to the supreme Purusha. As the first was a way of the will, and the second a way of knowledge, of the understanding, reason, so this is a way of the temperament and heart, and very intimately connected with the principle of bhakti. If it is pushed to the end, it arrives at the same result of a perfect equality. For the knot of the ego is loosened, and the personal claim begins to disappear. We find that we are no longer bound to joy in things pleasant or sorrow over the unpleasant. We bear them without either eager acceptance or troubled rejection. Refer them to the master of our being. Concern ourselves less and less with their personal result to us, and hold only one thing of importance, to approach God, or to be in touch and tune with the universal and infinite existence, or to be united with the divine, his channel, instrument, servant, lover, rejoicing in him and in our relation with him, and having no other object or cause of joy or sorrow. Here, too, there may be for some time a division between the lower mind of habitual emotions and the higher psychical mind of love and self-giving. But eventually, the former yields, changes, transforms itself, is swallowed up in the love, joy, delight of the divine, and has no other interests or attractions. Then all within is the equal peace and bliss of that union, the one silent bliss that passes understanding, the peace that abides untouched by the solicitation of lower things in the depths of our spiritual existence. Pausing mid-page 714, to be continued with the next recording.